He was demanding, chaotic, but he let me have a lot of opportunities that other accountants probably wouldn't get to have.
Welcome back to Label, the stories, the rumors, and the legends of Tooth & Nail Records. I'm your host, Matt Carter, and today we're talking to Annika Winters, who was an accountant at Tooth & Nail Records from 1998 to around 2004. But she was much more than just an accountant. She assisted and worked directly with Jim Worthen and eventually became Brandon's personal assistant. She lived in a communal house with other Tooth & Nail employees. Annika lived the Tooth & Nail life in a way that very few people could even imagine, sitting right between Brandon and Jim with a front row seat to Tooth & Nail's merger with EMI and subsequent explosion in the scene. So quite a cool perspective for sure. But before we jump in, today's show, sponsored by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Try ZipRecruiter for free by visiting ZipRecruiter.com/labeled. Okay, here's me and Annika.
And specifically, you just have this really, really wonderful point of view that I know is going to be helpful, and I'm anticipating it being helpful to me to understand too. But you were Brandon's assistant. That's what you got hired as, correct?
Actually, Jim's assistant. I was the accounting assistant. I just got my 2-year accounting degree, and I found out that Tooth & Nail was hiring an accounting assistant, so that's why I asked. Well, I don't know if I asked or I asked Chad Pearson. I got to know Brandon, and they brought me in to meet with Jim. I did become Brandon's assistant by default when someone left, so I was doing both jobs for a while until Lori came on. But I was focused on accounting, and that was really my job description. But I did so much more beyond accounting.
Mm-hmm. And you did that starting in what years? What year was that you got on?
1998.
And then you do that through 2005.
Yeah. Yeah. So a long time. Yeah.
So you're basically between Brandon and Jim during the most explosive time period in Tooth & Nail history, and there isn't a more really front row seat than that. Is that accurate?
I saw a lot. Obviously the finances, the royalty statements, everything that came through.
From both financial to interpersonal to musical to everything was right. I mean, when somebody was working closely with an assistant, I mean, that's it. I mean, they're privy to most all of it, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was, I was very close
conflict,
to the number.
Drama, all of it.
A lot of drama. there's a lot of drama, with the staff, with the bands.
Okay. Yeah. Well then this should be really helpful then. I want to try to talk about the transition. I want to know what your favorite music memories were, or artist. And for the record, Annika, I just went through it with her, what her favorite albums are. And of course, everybody knows Me Without You is on it because they're on everybody's list. Again, it's 100% streak. But we are going to focus not on Me Without You, but I just want you guys to know that they did, of course, come up on her favorite
album. I do have to say something about Me Without You. They were the one band where every person on staff would show up at the show because we were asked to go to the concerts when they were in town or the shows. No one had to ask anyone to go to Me Without You. They loved the band. They loved the guys. They loved the music. There was no asking.
Yeah. It was just a matter of who gets to stand where on side.
Yeah,
stage
exactly. They're, yeah.
To sort
everyone adored them for good reason.
Okay. So you go right across the whole merger thing. So when you started, I don't know if there's any story around it. How did you get hired, and where was that office, and what was the dynamic there? And then take me from that into the first band or album that is important.
Yeah,
to you.
So I knew Roadside Monument. That's how I was introduced to Tooth & Nail. I knew Jonathan Ford, and then I met the other guys in the band as well. But I really knew Jonathan Ford, and then through him, I met.
How did you know him?
Through a mutual friend. He knew my friend Sarah Bacher. I don't remember how they met. I think they met.
You lived in Seattle.
Yeah, I think they met at a Jawbreaker show. And it's funny because Sarah, she just spent the night at my house last night. She doesn't live in Portland, but she was driving from Utah to back home. Now she lives in Tacoma. And so I still am in touch with her. And she introduced me to Donathan Ford. And so I got to know about Tooth & Nail through Roadside Monument. They're not even that popular of a band. It's just because of the Seattle scene. I wasn't in the Christian scene. I'm religious, but I'm Mormon. So there's not really a music scene for Mormons.
There's no Mormon music scene. There's probably a few Mormons that sneak in the Christian music scene is all, right?
Yeah, there's a few. Like, yeah, the Killers. Like, there's some LDS. Musicians, not necessarily bands.
Oh, I didn't know Killers were LDS. That's cool.
Well, Brandon Flowers is. So I didn't even know about Tooth & Nail. I didn't come into it knowing the label, but I knew about them through Roadside. And then I met Chad, who worked there, and then I met Brandon because of Sarah's sister, Amanda, also knew Brandon. So when I found out through Chad that they were hiring an accounting assistant because someone just left, and Michelle Power, who used to do the books, was going to be Brandon's assistant. So then I took her position, and he was great to work for. He was demanding, chaotic, but he was a really good man. He's a really good man. So he's a good person to work for. He takes care of you. And he let me have a lot of opportunities that other accountants probably wouldn't get to have. So I appreciate that. I came from working from a grocery store, like a high-end grocery store in Seattle. And so it was a very different environment. It almost was like I wasn't working, even though I was doing accounting, doing my work. But it became my life. It became what I did after work. I went to work during the day, and then I'd hang out with Brandon, Chad, everyone after work. And it just became so much a part of my life.
What was it like in 98? Where was the office? What was it like?
So we were in downtown Seattle in Pioneer Square. It was not a good neighborhood at all. A lot of drug deals you see right when you walk outside. I would go on smoke breaks, even though I never smoked, because that's what the office did. So I would go out and not smoke, but just hang out and see downtown Seattle. There was the Velvet Elvis, which is a really cool club across the street. And I miss it so much. It was one of the best places in Seattle to see a show, and where I'd go see Roadside a lot. Yeah, that was a fun environment, because then we moved to Magnolia and it changed.
What was there and what changed? So what was, we're talking about merger here still. A merger is pretty much the central part of the whole story, like the pre and post that, and how it interfaces is like the undercurrent of the Tooth & Nail story, the way I am telling it or thinking of it or experiencing it. But what was it like before the merger, and does that interplay with the Magnolia office, and, what was it different in the vibes across that time period?
So it was like feast or famine from what I could tell with the financials. There was always enough money, but Brandon was always stressed out about money before the merger. So we would get very large checks from our distributor. We would be fine financially, but I think he could see some forecasting that I couldn't see, because sometimes he was so stressed out, and you could tell, like, it was always on his mind.
How could you tell?
He was just so stressed out. He didn't treat us differently, but he would talk about it, and you could tell money was tight. And it's a good thing that I had this job when I was 21, because I probably couldn't take it when I was older, because it didn't pay anything initially.
How was there no money? I mean, I was just talking to Brandon about this a good bit too, but you saw the finances and stuff, but from the outside, you got MXPX, Supertones, Juliana Theory, all this music's out by then. And
Theory wasn't signed yet.
This is 98, 99, about that time.
Yeah, so it was Supertones and MXPX who brought in the money.
So is it that that money was drying up then, like the most of it had been, or that just is all the money there was and the other projects were losing?
It was from sales. So Life in General, Supertones, Strike Back, is Life in General had already, that was the year before, 2 years before. And then Supertones Strike Back was the year I started. Mm-hmm. And So there was money coming in, but then he had a staff of 20. And I think a lot of people were asking him for money, raises. They could see that what they perceived as the label is successful.
And right. It seems that way.
Yeah. Brandon was only 26. He shared that he got a loan from his grandfather. I was there when he paid it back.
How sweet.
Which he was,
was
yeah,
that,
he
did you do that formally or like, is there a production about that or just he's
maybe not to everyone, but I did see the contract and he made sure he paid it back, which I thought
was a big
honorable.
Sentimental deal to Brandon, I bet. Like,
it probably wasn't even that much money, but it was at the time because Brandon was so young.
I think that's 60 grand or something like in that neighborhood.
Yeah, like 50 or 60. Yeah. But Brandon also had a few nice things and he didn't want to show them off. And I wouldn't say he hid things, but he wouldn't drive a certain car or, and just because he didn't want to have the perception that everything was going well all the time.
Right. So it was stressful money-wise. There's not enough money there. And Brandon had made some money or something, but he was worried about the perception of that.
Yeah. And who he hung out with. Mm-hmm. Like he hung out with the staff that didn't make much, but he was always very generous with us. He would take us out to dinner. He would always pay the bill. He was very generous because there was a difference in equality. But he loved to hang out with the staff and the bands. He didn't love to hang out with other business owners. That wasn't his thing. He was excited about his employees, the bands that would come through or that were on the label. He genuinely loved everyone.
And that's kind of top down because then it seems that the staff was very much that way. I mean, everybody that worked there, the salaries were low and they needed to be low and people worked there because they wanted to for the same reason that you're just saying, right?
Yeah, there was some people were jaded, understandably, but they also did it for the music or to go to the shows after work. And they were friends with a lot of the band.
You mean jaded in what way?
Just maybe about their mm-hmm. pay. And that kind of weeded some people out that weren't there for a very long time as well.
So people that had been there for a long time, and this is the late 90s now, and the finances are stressful, and these people now are saying, well, I've been here this long, I want these raises and things like that, that were not able to be accommodated at that particular time, and then that led...
And I don't know too many of the details, but yeah, and like I had a like coming to a moment as well. I'm like, I can't live, like my rent is $325 a month and I have a view of the space, you know, like a different time in Seattle, uh-huh. but like it's still stressful.
Yes. So that sets up Brandon's described that lull or something from time to time, but that's a more colorful description of what it must've felt like. And so it begins to change. You go to Magnolia, it's merger time. What happens then?
Yeah, so then we move over to Magnolia and we get the recording studio, which is another company for me to manage and do the books for and help buy equipment for and do all that. That was exciting to bring in Aaron Sprinkle.
Zach Hodges was there too then.
Oh, yeah. And then to have space, and I was kind of excited to have a parking lot because I didn't really drive. Or I had to pay for parking in downtown Seattle. So there were some things that I was grateful for, but we were all the way over by Discovery Park and we felt so isolated. So I felt like I got to know the staff better at that. Like we were all there together. We started going to lunch together every day. That became the highlight of our day. Like where are we going to go to lunch? We'd always go to Starbucks at least once a day together just to get out of that space. Because it was like we were at the park and it was very different than downtown Seattle. But with that, with the merger, I didn't feel the financial stress anymore. I was also able to travel we always went to Cornerstone and did a little bit of traveling and the local festivals. But at that point, Amanda McKinnon, she moved in with me. And so since she was the publicist, she was traveling with the bands for the, and since I would ask Brandon, can I come too? And he usually let me go. But at one point he asked me, why is the accountant going on this video shoot to for under oath? And so I'd have to negotiate with them. Like, okay, I'll use my airline miles. He's like, you have to stay in the hotel with the band. I'm like, done, fine.
My knuckles have turned to white. There's no turning back tonight. Kiss me one last time.
So during this time and the merger, it seems like the environment was a different one almost altogether in a relatively short period of time.
I think, yeah, and people were able to be paid better, I think. And he also brought people on that had come from other labels already doing what he wanted them to do. He sought different people out, like Roy Colber. And then he hired Seth, his brother, to do radio, Christian radio, and Amanda grew within that role of radio as well for the secular side. So I think it felt like, I mean, everyone always knew what they were doing, but it felt like everyone really knew what they were doing at that point. And it felt like better run, or maybe just not as much on Brandon. So he could maybe relax a little more.
Yeah, he says it that way, that he was felt free then to just be creative or do what he wanted to do and less of the responsibility on the financials or something. That really opened up a lot.
Yeah, and that completely changed my job. I was doing the royalty statements hands-on with Jim in an Excel spreadsheet. We just had 200 of them, and it was getting very difficult to manage because there were so many albums. Mm-hmm. And moving over to an ERP system from just using Excel, having everything integrated. Because I was like manually adding up distribution from our distributor sales. And then I didn't want to miss any, but some came from Caroline, some came from EMI. Like there were different, so we had all these different resources. But once the merger happened, everything was put on one platform. So for me, my job significantly changed. I went from cutting checks, paying bills, depositing checks to approving POs, seeing the invoices, approving them, and then sending them to EMI. So my job changed a lot. Even though what we were doing was kind of the same, I wasn't as hands-on.
So another thing that is interesting to me is there's a little bit of a current too of this whole thing that's in the culture of Tooth and Nail, where it's this cross between things on some level that are commercial or have value, and then the things that are just purely, you know, artistic and hip and mm-hmm. trendy, like having that element. Brandon's always done both, but there's always been people throughout the culture that represent just one or the other. And so when I think about the real hip kind of thing, that offers you this really artsy, is the word Brandon uses, but this really artsy thing that's super valuable. But those sometimes that is, you know, can come across snobby or some other kind of thing that rubs people the wrong way or is elitist in some regard. And I'm not talking bad about them. That's a valuable thing. I think, you know, that to me kind of traces out of James Morelos and Dave Bazan and, you know, yeah. Damon Jurado and, you know, like there's that
Danielson
kind
family.
Of thing. Yeah. And it's great. And everybody loves it, but it's, that, and then there's an element of the fans of that, and so I'm not talking about those individuals, but where that is looked at as hip, and then a dorky Christian band's dorky, and that's unhip. It's not as cool, but it makes money, and it's good, and there's nothing wrong with it, of course. And so I've always found that interesting, that's always existed in the company. You told me a story about, you said, would you have a roommate that was like that? Like,
yeah.
Could you tell me that?
Yeah, that's so...
You and Amanda lived together?
Yeah,
like
and
that.
Then we had another intern who loved everyone, very much so. But then there was another roommate that was very clean, kept to herself, always in her room. But then when someone like Me Without You would stay over, or Chris Staples from 238, or or Norma Jean or someone like that was very arty or respected in that world, she would come out of her room like, oh, you're actually being social. And then if maybe the Supertones were over, she wouldn't be around. So that annoyed me. And in some ways I felt like because we also had conversations about it, and she would say things about the label or maybe Brandon too. And I was just like, you work for him. I mean, I know you're an intern, but you get all these opportunities, but you're disagreeing with some of the choices he's making. And I'm seeing the sales numbers and I see how we're being paid. And I couldn't have that attitude and I don't treat people differently anyway, but all of the guys were really cool if they were Christian or if they played in churches or venues downtown. So yeah, that really bothered me.
Well, I like that point of view, because it's easy to be the hip person and say what's cool or whatever, but to push back on that it's a harder thing to do. But I like that, the what I would call backbone of you. Would you say you kicked her out of the place or something?
Yeah, she eventually moved on. I had another friend that needed a place to stay, and I was, yeah, I just didn't love her energy in the home, because yeah. We would have many bands stay where they needed a place to stay. This happened a lot. Like, we had entire tours at our house. And
what ones do you remember? That sounds like a fun house.
Yeah. So I lived in my grandmother's house. Before she passed away, she went into assisted living. And so we had this 1970s house that nothing had changed since the 1970s. So it was like walking back in time. And we had a downstairs room with stars on the ceiling that as the lights, and we called it the makeout room. Even we just called it that. But I remember Amanda would one night she got off the phone like 11 o'clock at night. She's like, okay, this band, just, they're leaving Portland. The entire tour is coming here. And there were 25 guys. And so like, okay, wow. Let's make all the beds. So we had a lot of space. So yeah, we made the beds and they got there later. And it was really difficult for me because
who was it?
I don't even remember. It was probably Norma Jean or Beloved or like that era. Mm-hmm. It was that era of bands, or Me Without You even. But to have that large.
That was a tour.
If that was a tour, that probably was the tour. And
2002.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, because I lived there with her 2002, 2003.
So in your one house, you had people, you know, a lot of people have bands there. That's a cool thing. But you had in your one house on one particular night, Norma Jean, Me Without You, and Beloved all sleeping in your house. That's awesome. My life, I'm caught behind. I'll no longer fly. I can't get seen. I'm not the boy that I once was. But I'm not the man I'll be. And I've been waiting now for 6 years on. And I've only just begun. For the day you'll hold her in your arms, oh risen Lord, my precious one. Okay, hiring is challenging. There's no doubt about that. But there's good news, because there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place, of course, ZipRecruiter.com/labeled. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. But they don't just stop there. They've got a powerful matching technology. And ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. Now, I cannot stress enough, and I don't even know if I need to stress it, because you know if you are in need of quality help, how important it is. And the difference between highly qualified candidate and the exact right fit for you, a top candidate to fit your culture, cannot be overstated. It is incredibly important and could be a life changer, to be honest. And so you'll never miss a great match with ZipRecruiter. As applications come in, they analyze each one and spotlight the top candidates, so you're not going to miss one. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site the first day, which is amazing. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/labeled. That's ZipRecruiter.com, LABELED. ZipRecruiter.com/labeled. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
All right, back to Annika, talking about the perils of having bands stay at your place.
But they would not party, but they would stay up in our kitchen all night. Like, this is not necessarily them, but the bands. And we'd have to be at work at 8 a.m. So it was hard to juggle both. I did both, and we all did. We would go through these phases, and then we would just sleep. Like, we would have days where we didn't do anything, and we would just hang out and not have any social life after some of these hangouts when they were there for a couple days.
Do you think any of this is like, is any of that unhealthy in the long run, that everything's just so boundaryless?
It was kind of funny.
Like work and the people and, all that.
I kind of signed up for it and I enjoyed it. We would laugh because we had a landline, and then Amanda and I had our cell phones. Sometimes Brandon would need something answered, and so he'd call my cell phone, and then I wouldn't answer. And so then he'd call Amanda's cell phone, and then he'd call the landline, and we're just like, who's going to get that? Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of, blending of work-life balance.
What other music was powerful to you? I mean, I'm sure you like all those bands, but you mentioned Under Oath previously. Was Under Oath a big, I feel like at this time you've got, I suppose, Only Chasing Safety. Is that one you like?
I love that album. I really loved from beginning to finish. And I always listened, when you ask for songs, I just didn't listen to one song. I think Jim, he would just, in the morning, he would put on an album, and then we would just listen to it from start to finish. And so I really got to know the bands through the entire album. Under Oath. And then we got to know those guys pretty well. And this is with the intern who ended up marrying James.
Jen.
Yeah, Jen. Yeah. So with her, we went from the Seattle show, or Portland, Seattle, to Vancouver with them. And they stayed at our house. They probably didn't even need to stay at our house because of how big they were. But I remember I waxed Timmy's chest. And
slow down on that one.
We just got to know each other. We were in the bathroom, and I think I was waxing my upper lip or something. It was very close quarters. And he's like, I want to wax my back. I'm like, it really hurts. Like, you sure you want to do that? And so the whole band was in the bathroom with us. And yeah, we started doing that. I think he punched someone, one of his bandmates, not me, because it hurt so bad. Yeah, it was.
That's a good one.
Yeah, we got to know them fairly well.
What other bands did you have relationships or with their music or their albums?
And part of this just when I was just thrown into obviously Roadside Monument, but I got to know all the music from when I started. So the Dingies, I got to know Pegleg because he would come to town for his artwork. I really enjoyed Armageddon Massive because I got to know him during that album.
I don't know what that is. Sorry. Oh, what is Armageddon Massive?
I think that's the name of it.
That's the album?
Yeah. And it was kind of when that type of music was kind of going out of style, I think. I listened to that album a lot. And Goaty Hook, I got to know Goaty Hook really well. They also stayed at our house, all those guys. I liked
Craig's
Brother, I mean. I don't even say it anymore.
That's funny.
And I loved that album. I mean, that. The artwork.
The first one?
Yeah. And this is 98. This is when I'm introduced to all of it. Obviously Starflyer, every album that Jason put out. I love Starflyer. And even Joy Electric. So we used to have these Mormon dances and the DJ would play Joy Electric, which was really interesting because no one knew who they were in the church. And so I would bring the Joy Electric CDs and ask the DJ to play them. And he would. He's like, I know this band. And so he would play it. And so my little group of people, and I would bring staff there too. We would dance to it.
About some of that and the financial stuff and the hipness and the cool bands and all that stuff. This is about when BEC begins to really make money, is there in this time also, right?
Yeah. Well, it was Supertones, and then it, of
there
course,
was a Supertones already, but it feel, oh, I feel like I, the timeline,
on,
I'm not sure. But
yeah, then, well, Jeremy Camp, obviously.
When did Jeremy Camp blow up?
I think it was 2004, maybe 2003. But that, yeah, he was very successful.
You know, we put Brandon's got the studio now with Aaron Sprinkle producing these records at an extremely high level in a very specialized way. Mm-hmm. And that thing seems to really blow up, right?
Yeah, and it also brought more bands to us, so we got to know them better. They would stay in the studio for 3 weeks to a month. And especially when they were, I mean, they moved to Capitol Hill eventually. But before that, they were at the Magnolia building in the basement. And so we'd see them just like they were not, they're just like the employees every day. Like, oh, hey. And so we really got to know some of the bands more intimately than we would have otherwise because of the proximity of the recording studio and just going to the recording studio, helping or just hanging out and listening to the album while they're recording it. So I really enjoyed having Aaron there. It was a fun time.
Yeah, it seemed like the whole culture was very, you know, small and cohesive, and you could know everything. You know, everybody felt real very connected, it seems. And I think that's a big secret to, you know, the people there working hard for the bands that they know and see. And it's just, it's all so close that you know you're working side by side with other people who are, you know, caring, and something like that is what it feels like.
Yeah, it's like a family. I still feel that. Yeah.
You still feel that now? What do you mean?
We still have this love of music and Tooth and Nail that we have this inside view, and it bonds us together. And so I've kept in touch with a lot of people from Tooth and Nail and still go to concerts and shows with them to this day, or still like Orion from Slow Coming Day. When he passes through town, I always see him. Like he always sleeps on my couch. Like
he's one of the first people I got to know from that is in the Tooth and Nail world too, is staying on his couch in California in 02 kind of thing.
Oh yeah. And yeah. Cool. Now he's in Oklahoma. No, Nebraska.
We got to drop a Slow Coming Day song right here. There's no other way that was going to make it in. That's great. I love that. We met them, and they recorded that album with Ed Rose, and I thought it sounded so cool, and the band never made it, but it's great. I love it.
Yeah, so. It's a really good album, and good people. But yeah, so I'm still in touch with random people from that world. Even Brandon's other assistant, Lori, whenever I go to New York, I see her. And Zach Schultz, Chad Pearson, I still consider them some of my best friends. Even though I don't see them, when I do see them, it's so grateful to know them.
And so it seems you've gone on to do other I mean, you're a financial analyst. What do you do now exactly?
I'm a finance manager.
Manager.
Yeah, and I ended up going on to get my MBA in finance. And it's what I've done in my career for the last 20-something years. But Tooth and Nail was my second job after being a bookkeeper. I learned how to do accounting because of the three publishing companies, four record labels, recording studio. I did the books for all of those and the retail store, wholesale, retail. So I learned everything I need to learn in my career that I do now or I've done. And over the span of 20 years, I grew up in my career working at Tooth and Nail. I learned how to do what I do in that environment where I didn't feel like I was working.
That's terrific way to say it, and it must be what it has to be to keep you at a low salary. I'm sure you've gone on now and are very successful in doing it at a higher level. But would you say the jobs you've had since they don't have that family sense then, or do they do?
They do in some ways, but not as close. And because of my experience at Tooth and Nail, I've always sought out jobs that have been creative in the creative industry and fashion in design or PR, media, because of I've grew to love artistic people or creative people and work with them, and being able to explain or work side by side in a very different role has been very rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Well, loyal, hardworking, and smart are some of the ways people describe you. I'm sure you may know that, but I mean, I agree, but it seems that you know, had a very unique and valuable fit from what I observe and have observed and what I've heard other people speak about you. It seems that you've been important in this story to a degree that I hope you recognize that too, that you, you know,
oh, it's good
just
to
as
hear.
Been important things that have impacted your life, it seems that you've been that to other people as well, is the sense I get.
And that's really good to hear. But also Amanda McKinnon and I used to joke, we'd say, like, on our resume, on from the outside world, what we did at Tooth & Nail looks like we worked. And we did work, but it didn't feel like we were working necessarily. Yeah.
That's great. Okay, so we want to say a huge thank you to Annika for taking the time to share her story with us and for being part of the culture that's brought amazing music to so many people. Also, don't put it off any longer. If you've been meaning to join the Labeled Patreon members group, get the bonus tape and all the other stuff and support a show that you like, go ahead and do that. You can find it at patreon.com/labeled. But join our Facebook group. It's free and it's been really fun. We just did a bracket that somebody ran in there, which was terrific. It was all of the Solid State bands in like a March Madness style bracket. You'll have to join the group to see what happened, but could be said that it's controversial, I would say. Also, going to try and do some more fun stuff in that group. There's a lot of people in bands and former staff and things like that that are in the group, current staff even. But Derek Tenbush is one guy that worked there, and you've heard from him a little bit before, and we'll further on the podcast. But he told me he wants to do an AMA, so we're going to set that up and get a long thread going where he can answer a bunch of questions about his time at the label and things like that. Derek's terrific. And we'll have a lot of fun over there in the Facebook group. Search for the Labeled Facebook group and join us over there. It's free and it's fun. Okay, let's roll those credits.
My name is Ross from Tulsa, Oklahoma. I'm a Labeled member, and my favorite Tooth & Nail band of all time is Beloved. Matt Carter is our host. Editing and sound design by Melanie Studley. Story by Matt Carter. Production manager is Reva Henson. Our executive producer is Brandon Ebel. Special thanks to Adam Scatula, Tyson Paolotti, and Marshall from Fremont at Tooth & Nail Records. This podcast is made possible by Jesse Batesel, photographer at I Was Nick on Instagram, The Hero and the Monsters, who have a new EP, Always, and the rest of the members of the Labeled community on Patreon. If you're interested in becoming a title sponsor for your band, brand, or nonprofit, find us at Patreon at patreon.com/labeled.